others as well. But you know, when we think of 1 Corinthians 15, we know that's the chapter about the resurrection. And I mean everything there. That yes, there is a resurrection. Yes, that Christ was raised. Yes, we will be raised. Answering the questions, how will we be raised? What body? We don't know. But we know that we will be raised. And so it comes down to verse 58, which is the very conclusion of this chapter. And it begins with, therefore, because of these things that we've already discussed, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Now, you could tell from the songs that Larry led, I gave him a hint as to what the lesson was to be. And he went along very well with that. And I have always had the tendency to think that the conversation, if you will, just stops right here at verse 58. Because after all, the next verse is in another chapter. But after looking at reading after some other people, I realized that that really isn't the case. Yes, the conclusion in verse 58 is based upon the other things, but the thought, if you will, continues on down throughout chapter 16. For example, in verse 10 of verse 16, chapter 16, it says, "And if Timothy comes, see that he may be with you without fear, for he does the work of the Lord as also I do." There's that work of the Lord. In verse 15 through 18, speaking of the Stephanus, the household of Stephanus. And he says that it is the first fruits of Achaia, that they have devoted themselves to the ministry of the saints, that you may also submit to such. And it says, and to everyone who works and labors with us. And notice, and again, this is something that I don't guess I had ever noticed. We know that Epaphroditus was the messenger for the Philippians because Paul says so. And he brought what was lacking. In verse 17, I'm glad about the coming of Stephanus, Fortunatus, and Achaicus. For what was lacking on your part, they supplied. These are people who are working. And so I want us to kind of key in on particularly verse 58. And we're going to use that as our starting point. And this is, therefore, why should we be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that our labor is not in vain? And I think certainly if you're familiar with the content of chapter 15, it is that since Christ was raised from the dead, never to die again, we have the assurance that we will be raised when he comes again. And so therefore our goal has to be, the most important thing in our life has to be the work of the Lord. As Jesus puts it in Matthew chapter 6, there at verse 19, this short paragraph says, "Do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Now, you know, we're not typically too worried about thieves breaking into our houses. Because most of us, what do we have? We're more worried about the cyber thieves. But my point is there is always something. And the point that Jesus is making is, where should we put our emphasis? On things of this earth or on things that are heaven? And he says, laying up for yourself a good foundation in heaven. Because we need to be thinking on those eternal things. But coming back again now to 1 Corinthians 58. Notice it says, always. Do I need to define that for you? I think we all know what always means. It means always. But what about abounding? And this is a word we don't see as much. I don't think it's difficult. I think this is a word certainly that we as Christians, readers of the Bibles, are very familiar with. But what does abounding mean? Well, there's a place in Matthew chapter 7, in Luke's gospel as well, where Jesus talks about judge not unless you be judged, for with the judgment you judge, you will be judged. And he talks about that, in particularly Luke's account, that if you judge righteously, it will be given to you and it will be running over. And I think that's one illustration of what it means to abound. When we talk about working, and particularly the work of the Lord, as it is in this case, we need to understand we're talking about going above and beyond. That's a phrase we all understand. To overdo. And I mean, we all have said, and we know others who say, well, you know, you do something and it really is a little extra. You didn't have to do that. What are they saying? You're abounding. You're going above what was expected of you. When you go to a funeral of someone that you really didn't know, people see that as above and beyond. When you take food to someone who needs it, and it not necessarily been planned, if you will. Again, you didn't have to do that. Those are examples of always abounding. And certainly, one of the places in which we must abound more than perhaps others is abounding in love. And in Philippians chapter 1, verse 9. One of the first commands that Paul gives to the brethren at Philippi, it says, and this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and all discernment, that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness which are by Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. I pray that your love may abound. Love for what? Chapter 2, love one for another. But I think here probably it's the love of God, the love of what's right. In 1 Thessalonians, just a couple of books afterwards, 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 12. He says, and may the Lord make you increase and abound in love to one another and to all, just as we do to you. I'm your example. So that he, God, may establish your hearts blameless in holiness before our God and Father at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ with all his saints. May the Lord make you increase and abound. In chapter 4, verse 1. Finally then, brethren, we urge and exhort in the Lord Jesus Christ that you should abound more and more, just as you receive from us, how you also ought to walk and to please God. For you know the commandments that we gave you through the Lord Jesus Christ. Paul was concerned about them, that they grow. And there's always potential with newer Christians to not grow. But it seems that these brethren Paul had been among them perhaps a month, perhaps two or three, but not a long time. And the persecution was so bad, that was what drove Paul out of the city. And they didn't stop when they got rid of Paul. It went to the brethren. And so there was definitely a danger. But that's why he tells them that you abound more and more. In verse 10, he mentions, verse 9, let's begin. But concerning brotherly love, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. And indeed you do so toward all the brethren who are in all the province of Macedonia. But we urge you, brethren, that you increase more and more. Now you already are loving all the brethren in all the province, all around you. But what does he say? More and more, so that you're abounding, so that you're going above and beyond. And when we go to 2 Corinthians this time, chapter 8, we notice that these brethren in Macedonia, and I'm certain this included those from Thessalonica, in chapter 8, verse 1, he says, "Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God we bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints." Now, these brethren, it says in verse 2, in great trial of affliction, their abundance of their joy, but their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality, to the point that Paul says that they, verse 4, that they begged us with much entreaty. Why? Why would they have to beg? Because Paul knew this was above and beyond. He knew, verse 3, "I bear witness that according to their ability, and yes, beyond their ability, they were freely willing to give." Now you say, "No, wait a minute. If they didn't have money to give, how could they give?" Well, and this is my understanding. If you're on a monthly budget and all your money comes in at the first of the month, you know that you have to make that money last till the end of the month. And so you can kind of space it out. But if something special, whether good or bad, whether you blow out a tire, whether, you know, whatever, you know that you have the cash, but you're going to have to readjust. And I suspect, I understand that's what was there. Paul knew that they really, as we would say, you really couldn't afford it. And yet they were willing to do that. Why? Because of their joy. It says the abundance of their joy. They abounded in this. And so coming back again now to 1 Corinthians. Now we're going to be looking in chapter 16. Is there a connection between the collection and verse 58 of chapter 15? And I mean, I always assumed, and I always thought it was kind of odd that it was just like subject stops, subject starts. But you know, this is Corinthians, and every chapter almost has a different subject. But I think here there is a connection. Part of this being abounding in the work of the Lord is this, and concerns the collection. And he says here in verse 1, "Concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come." Now, very clearly stated, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, you must do the same thing. There have been some brethren of late that have tried in their attempt to justify taking up the collection on Saturday, because you know now some churches of Christ, so-called, have services on Saturday, two or three on Saturday, two or three on Sunday. They have one with instrumental music at maybe 10. The one without is about 8 or so. This is to accommodate so they can become a mega church. And on Saturday and Sunday, the services are the same. They have the Lord's Supper on Saturday as they do on Sunday. They have the collection on Saturday as they do on Sunday. And in their trying to justify it, and there is no justifying it, this is one of the arguments that they make. Well, this isn't really a command. This isn't really orders. This is just a suggestion. Well, I might ask, why did Paul make this suggestion? Did they come together on Saturday? We don't see the church meeting on Saturday. We see it meeting on the first day of the week, Acts 27. Here, certainly that's the implication. And that's the command. And Paul tells them, this is, as they are doing, this is what you should do. Obviously, he gave a similar command to those in Macedonia. And what are we talking about here? We're talking about the work of the Lord. And part of that is the contribution that we should each lay by. And it's interesting, he says, on the first day of every week. And I've known Christians, I'm thinking of one in particular, older lady, all she had was her Medicare check, or Social Security check. And of course she got that once a month. And she told me one time, she said, "Now, Tal, you know, I make it my business when I get my check to give a certain amount." And, you know, that's her decision. I think there's a reason for once every first day of the week. But that's part of the work of the Lord. And going back again to 2 Corinthians, now to chapter 9, I want us to notice what Paul has to say to the Corinthians here. Because apparently they had promised, they had pledged, whatever word you want to use, money long time ago. He makes reference to that. Let's begin at verse 1. "Now concerning the ministering, the service of to the saints, it is superfluous, it's unnecessary for me to write to you. For I know your willing, about which I boast of you to the Macedonians, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal has stirred up the majority of many of them. Yet I have sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this respect, that I said, as I said, you may be ready, lest if some Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to mention you, should be ashamed of this confident boasting. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as a grudging obligation." Paul says, you promised, you were, oh yes, you're gung-ho about this. He said, but that was a year ago. And I'm not sure you're ready yet. And he says, and you know, we told them, we told the brethren in Macedonia, Macedonia's here, Achaia's here. So they're neighbors. And he said, we told them, they've been ready for a year. And if we get there and it's not ready, we're all going to be embarrassed. We're going to be embarrassed because we said it, you would be. And you're going to be embarrassed because you said you would be. And so, yes, there is that. And I think the collection is part of the work. Now, brethren, y'all know me well enough. I've been here for 6 years. And I think I probably preached on the collection once or twice. Because y'all understand. And I'm very appreciative of that. But this is part of the work of the Lord. And sometimes we think, well, you know, collection, giving money, well, I'm not really doing anything. But if you remember, in Romans chapter 12, verse 6, "Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If our gift is prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Our ministry, serving, let us use it in our service to others. He who teaches in teaching, he who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness." He who gives is right in the middle of all those other gifts. And so, brethren, that is something that we need to be aware of. And I want us to turn, if you will, now to Philippians chapter 2, where Paul, I think, gives us an example of what it means to be abounding, always abounding. And you may say, well, this is an extreme example. Maybe so. But it is an example that is there for a reason for us to learn from. Verse 25 of chapter 2. Yet I considered it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, fellow soldier. This is someone Paul has worked with. Someone he considers not only his brother, but his fellow worker, his fellow soldier. But your minister, and the one who ministered to my need, since he was longing for you, that's why I considered it necessary to send him to you, and was distressed because you had heard that he was sick. For indeed he was sick, almost unto death. But God had mercy on him, and not only unto him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Now you know they didn't have Facebook, they didn't have the internet, they didn't even have phones. So if word got to the brethren in Philippi that this Epaphroditus was sick, that would be very concerning. And if they told him he's really sick, that would be even more concerning. And so that's why Paul felt necessary to send him now. And he goes on to say, therefore, I send him the more eagerly, that when you see him again, you may rejoice and I may be less sorrowful. Receive him, therefore, in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such men in esteem. Why? Because for the work of Christ, he came close to death, not regarding his life, to supply what was lacking in your service toward me. I know what you read right there. Whatever it was he did, I don't know. He came close to death. And it was something that says not regarding his life. That he wasn't worried about that. And why did he do this? To supply what was lacking in your service toward me. That, I suspect, is probably money. I don't know, you know, or things. But he says very clearly, this is why. Here's someone, certainly, who is abounding in the work of the Lord. Now, let's think and let's make the application to this local church. Other local churches, that's not my business. I'm not a member there. But I want us to think about how can we abound in the work of the Lord. And you look around and we have, I think, 18 people here tonight. And we're happy for that. But four of those are just visiting occasionally, very occasionally. We have our four that I call 2/3 members, because 1/3 of the service they're at the service at Bethany on Sunday morning, and they're here on Sunday night and Wednesday night. So they're here 2/3 of the time. And that's our joke. And so, you know, out of 18, we're really not that many. Dana's not here. And that's someone we're missing. So how can we abound in the work of the Lord? Oh, that church of 400, oh, they can do all sorts of things. Yeah, but we also should abound in the work of the Lord. And I think the first thing and something that every person can do is that we must abound in prayer. We must be very dedicated to prayer. Pray without ceasing, says Paul in 1 Thessalonians. And we need to pray for each other. But I think we need also to pray for the contacts we have. And I don't know whether you've seen this cycle, but it's unfortunately far too common. You have a contact, you have a couple, and they begin, and they're very excited about learning from the Bible. And I mean, it's, as I said, I think this morning, when they understand, it's like, okay, now I understand. One young man told us, you know, I get it now why in church they jump from here to there and so on and so forth, because it's not all in one place. I get it. He was excited. But when it came to him seeing what he would have to do in order to be a Christian, it was too much. His wife has kind of gotten, anyway, the cares of the world. And it's tragic, but it happens. We need to pray for them so that they may come back. Because in the beginning, at least, there was interest. There was interest. They wanted to know. They wanted to learn. And we need to pray that they will not let the devil put obstacles in their way. I ask you to pray for the two ladies that are coming to the meetup group. And they have been coming pretty faithfully on Thursday night. And Tuesday night, thank you. Tuesday night at 7:30 at Arby's. Okay, just in case you want to come. And they have been coming very faithfully. And I think this has been an eye-opener. We were studying in Mark chapter 13 about the wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and all of that. And just made the application that the text does. That all these things will happen during that generation. And one of the ladies was like, I get it now. All this stuff about it's happening now, it's happening then. And when it was there, it was the other. Now I get it. And that's why we're teaching. But you and I both know there's more than that. So I ask you to pray for them. We have others who have joined the group but have never showed up. But that's okay. Normally there are seven or eight of us. And so we need your prayer for that. We need prayers, and we need all to pray for other people who are seeking but need someone to guide them. And brethren, this is a very unique situation for Dana and I. When you have kids in school and kids in 4-H or kids in whatever, you meet people. You meet lots of them. When our kids were little, Pax was in one group, Pax and Christy were in one age group, Kai was in another one. And so we met parents and kids on this one, we met parents and kids through this group. But we don't have any kids at home anymore. We don't have any grandkids here. It's very difficult for us to make contact with people because we're not out working in the world. We're not out, those that come, we try, but you know how that goes. And the sad thing is, we're not the only ones. Basically, very few of you, and this is just neither right or wrong, it just is. You don't have that many contacts. And so that makes it difficult. When we were in London, Kentucky, the brethren brought contacts. And it was amazing. So we need to pray that we may find contacts, that those people may come. We need to pray that we can have more workers, because that's what we need also. We need to pray that God will guide us in all things. And we need to pray that God will give us the strength that we need. And brethren, I know that my health and Dana's health have, I hate to say have been a drag, but they've not been what they could be in the last couple of years. And I'm so thankful to God that we are both stronger physically than we have been in 2 to 3 years. And I'm so thankful for that. And I'm thankful that we're able, that we have the strength to do more. But you know, when you get to our age, you're still limited. If anybody asked me to get on the treadmill, I would have to say no. Because I don't care how slow they run it. In 5 or 10 minutes, I'm going to be flat on my face. But that's, you know. But we need to continue to pray for the church here. Spanish-speaking, English-speaking. And the other point that I want us to think about tonight, actually there are two, is we need to have a plan. What are we going to do? And plan too often are, well, we want to do personal work. We want to evangelize. Perfect. That's a command of God. That's one of the things, that is not the most important thing, that is certainly right up there. We have to save ourselves, but then to reach out to others is the next. So how are we going to do it? And that's where the rub comes in, isn't it? If we don't have a plan, it's not going to get done. We talk about it, we think about it, but we have to think about, so how are we going to do this? And we've tried a couple of things. You know, we tried the house to house. And the results from that is a sister, and I think she said she's 76, been a member at Coopertown for 30 years, started taking the correspondence course. And I'm glad that she does that, but that isn't really who we're looking for, is it? We had another man, and lives not far from here, that requested that the house to house continue to be sent to him. I've not been able to make contact with him yet. And so that obviously did not seem to be working for us. Well, what should we do? And that's what we have to think. That's what we have to plan to see. What can we do to bring others to Christ? And I think this house-to-house thing makes it clear that we have to be flexible. We tried that for 18 months. And we sent out about 3,000 a month. And that was the results we received. And both of them, the lady with the correspondence course, I think that was unrelated to the fact that they had announced this was going to be the last one. The other one, to continue, that was because he saw. And so we need to be willing to look at that. And we need to be willing to acknowledge that sometimes what we think is the best way to do it is not necessarily the best way. In the book of Acts, in chapter 16, you remember on this second missionary journey of Paul, Paul has now with him Silas. In the first verses, Timothy joins them. Verse 3, Paul wanted to have him go on with him. So Timothy is now part of the party, if you will. And so they went throughout all that area, Galatia, and that region. And it says in verse 5, so the churches were strengthened in the faith and increased in number daily. Now continue on, verse 6. Now when they had gone through Phrygia and the region of Galatia, those two regions right there, the eastern part of Turkey, now today, says they were forbidden by the Holy Spirit to preach the word in Asia. Asia is where Ephesus is, where the seven churches of Asia, that's a province. It was a very wealthy province, a very important province. But they were forbidden to preach the word there. After they had gone on a little farther north, they came to Mysia. They tried to go into Bithynia, and Bithynia is right on the Black Sea, a very wealthy area at that time. They tried to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit did not permit them. So passing by Mysia, they came to Troas, which is a port on the Aegean Sea. And there, you can imagine, they're just kind of like, Lord, what do you want us to do? And a vision appeared to Paul in the night. A man of Macedonia stood and pleaded with him, saying, come over to Macedonia and help us. And the result was, after he had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go to Macedonia, concluding that the Lord had called us to preach the gospel to them. Now, I'm not saying that the Lord is going to give us a vision. I think the Lord may help us to see where there are prospects. But the point I want us to see is Paul had the idea, and Paul is not, this is not Paul's first trip. This is not Paul's first attempt. And so they wanted to go, first of all, to Asia to preach. And he eventually did on the next journey. But the Lord did not permit him. So instead of saying, well, Lord, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I need you to give me a second answer, a third answer. The Holy Spirit said, no, that was it. And so they went, then wanted to go to Bithynia. And again, they were not permitted. And so they waited. And the Lord gave them the answer. Now again, I'm not suggesting that the Lord's going to give me an answer like that in a vision. But I think we need to just realize if this is not working, then we need to be flexible enough to say, okay, we gave it a good chance. Let's move on to something else. And it's interesting, going back to 1 Corinthians chapter 16, Paul is just kind of letting the church at Corinth, where he had spent at least 18 months. Now I will come to you. This is verse 5. I'm sorry. Now while I come, I will come to you when I pass through Macedonia. So Macedonia is up here. Achaia's down here. Ephesus would have been, that would have been probably the easiest place to go from Ephesus to Philippi or one of the ports in Macedonia and then come down. And that way he could strengthen the brethren in Thessalonica, other places. And so he's going to come from Macedonia and he's going to come down on his way to Jerusalem into Achaia, where they are. And he says, I will come to you when I pass through Macedonia, for I am passing through Macedonia. And it may be that I will remain or even spend the winter with you. That's where he's going to remain, with them. That you may send me on my journey wherever I go. For I do not wish to see you now on the way, just passing by. But I hope to stay a while with you, if the Lord permits. One of the things that Paul's accusers, those who claim that he's not really an apostle in 2 Corinthians, apparently one of the charges that they made was he was so wishy-washy. He said he was coming, and then he didn't come. And he said he's just wishy-washy. You can't depend on him. But it's very clear if the Lord permits. And he goes on to say, and this is the next point I want us to think about before we close. But I will tarry, in verse 8, in Ephesus until Pentecost. For a great and effective door has opened to me, and there are many adversaries. Now, did you see those two things he mentions? There's a great door been opened to me, but there are many adversaries. Does that compute, to use that old phrase? Does that go together? Brethren, and Paul says in 2 Corinthians that we were fearful that we were going to die in Asia, and that would be Ephesus more than likely. But the Lord saved us from that death. There were serious problems. There were serious enemies, adversaries. But that's what usually happens when a person becomes a Christian. That's when the devil begins to attack them the hardest. Because after all, before they became a Christian, don't worry about them. Give them a little temptation now and then, but you know, I got them. They're hooked. When a person is studying and coming and understanding and liking and enjoying what they're learning, the devil's not dumb. The devil knows if I don't do something drastic, they're gone. And that's what happens so often. And so, brethren, when we're having success, we must know and we must expect opposition, adversaries of some kind or the other. And there are so many, and I think we all know that it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And so, brethren, let us...